For us, the Enneagram is the map for that journey.
Yeah, yeah. I get that.
All it gives you is a self-awareness of that pattern, so you can make choices as to when to use those wonderful gifts and when not to, because you're now not necessarily operating in the way that's your best self.
This last quest for more joy and more love, stated so specifically through the activity of the podcast, was in fact inspired by an event that absolutely shattered my identity.
Yes, yes. Right?
The separation and divorce of 7 years ago, whatever identity I'd built up in order to cope with what I call the conditioned world, whatever identity that I had built up was absolutely smashed by the pain and the chaos.
Yes, because
of that singular event.
I was a husband, I was a father,
I was more than that.
Homeowner, I was all of that. But perhaps underneath you, once it was all gone, you had to then find who was this person underneath that didn't ever go away under all the trappings of the conditioned world. I think of a little nut with a, like a macadamia nut with a really hard core, very hard to crack open, and that may well have been the pre-divorce Bernie. And then in the chaos that you talked about with the marriage splitting up, that then started to crack open. And the seed started to grow.
I agree.
And now you're not only growing a tree, but there's perhaps more nuts falling off it that are cracking open with your listeners, and you're growing a whole forest, perhaps.
You should have described the separation and divorce as the ultimate nutcracker.
It's quite a difficult task for all of us when we, to put aside that lifelong pattern that we developed. And to try and put that aside and say, so who was underneath all of that?
Chip, how much are you enjoying this journey?
Yeah, it's been really good. It's been such a good few weeks.
I'm not talking about the journey with Bernie and Chip.
I'm talking about the journey
with Hillary Langford.
It doesn't rhyme quite so much, but it is still, it's a very enjoyable journey. Yeah.
Mate, it was a terrific podcast that we did last week with Hillary, just learning about her life and all the things that she's discovered and the actions and the strategies that have, you know, helped her evolve into the beautiful human being that she is. But what about the journey during the week where she invited us to do the
Enneagram?
Mate, how'd you find it?
I loved it. Mate. You know, I love this kind of stuff because, as you know, and as the keener-eyed listener may have detected by now, I think that awareness is probably the most important thing, because that's what everything starts with. And the Enneagram is a way to raise your self-awareness.
Mate, you took the word right out of my mouth, because how many times have I heard you during this podcast use the word awareness?
It's almost like it's part of the plan, isn't it?
So what a beautiful tool, what a beautiful experience in order to become more aware of who we are as human beings so that we can make more enlightened decisions, more clear decisions on how we might go about finding greater joy and greater love in our life. And of course, to deliver the feedback, isn't this an episode of difference? Hillary Langford. Hi, Hillary.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, great. Welcome back, and thank you, thank you. You're going to be playing, I don't think I could say playing the Bernie role.
No.
You're going to be playing the Hillary role. But dear listeners, Hillary is going to be our chair today. She is going to be leading the podcast. Now, the reason is because this is an unusual episode in which, in a way, Chip and I are the guests. And Hillary, could you explain how you see your role today?
Well, firstly, just let me say I feel really privileged to be here with you talking about the Enneagram. And I see my role as facilitating something of a conversation, but mm-hmm. we can't really start the conversation until we're all on a similar page about, like, what is the Enneagram and why do we do it? Mm-hmm. But I'm going to give the listeners a rare insight into Bernie and Chip, because it ended up that as we worked through the Enneagram, they're both very different personality types. And so we're going to unpack their type and ask them to speak quite a bit to it. In terms of the Enneagram, there are 9 core, distinctly different ways of viewing the world, processing the information we get from the world, the sorts of decisions we make, the feelings we have, et cetera, et cetera.
When you say 9 core for 8 billion people around the globe?
Yes, everyone. Everyone tends to fall into one of these categories.
Wow.
You know, what's amazing, if you think about it, of all of the mammals on Earth, the human beings have probably been the most successful of all of the
types. I think
that's
fair.
Mm. Yep. And probably the reason why we've been so useful is that we have 9 different types of people throughout the world, all of which are focusing on different parts of data that are available. So our human brain can't take in all the data around us. But when we're little and when we're young, we learn that we've got to get our parents' attention and their love. And for our very survival, we need to be loved and validated. And our parents are busy people and there's other things going on in their lives. Sometimes there's a whole swag of kids. You and I know a lady who comes from a family of 11 kids. I came from only 5. But somehow we have to make our mark so that our parents go, oh, yeah, little Bernie needs some attention, or, oh, little Chip needs attention. So what is it that we do to somehow differentiate ourselves? And we aren't sure whether we're born with a DNA predisposition for all of this, or whether we, or maybe it's a combination of both nature and nurture. But we start to work out, oh yes, when I do this, I get a lot of attention. But when I do this, they seem to ignore me. And when I do this, they clap and they say, fantastic, what a good girl you are. But when I do that, they say, that's naughty, don't do that. So little kids are super intelligent. And we're trying to work out what's the magic that I have to do so that my parents will love me. And I start to fall into a pattern, which then becomes a fairly automatic pattern. And there are, seem to be 9 possible types of ways we can go. And the Enneagram, some of you may have seen a diagram, something like this. In fact, if you Google Enneagram, you'll see all sorts of examples.
Well, we'll link to one in the show notes too, just so people can be really clear.
Oh, great. And so each of these types are quite distinct. None of them are good. None of them are bad. They all have their highs and lows. And all of us tend to fit into one of them. And in fact, Bernie and I are over on this side. I'm a 2 and he says he's a 3. And Chip is over here as a number 5. And so we'll come back and learn more about the 3s and the 5s as this podcast unfolds.
It's over to you, Madam Chair.
So we're born, and we've talked quite a lot about being born, but we're born with something before it starts getting pulled around by the world. So we're born by an extraordinary gift that we already have. Some, you know, in some religious traditions, they talk about it being our divine spark. Other people talk about our inner light or our essence. But it, there's a core of who we are. And when we look at a little baby, we often say, this baby looks like it's been here before. You know, there's something there already from word go. In fact, for type 3s, Bernie, we often talk about an inner radiance and a value that you bring to the world. And we'll come back to that a bit later. And for Chip, there's something about clarity and illumination. And these are these inner sparks that we have. But then the world grabs hold of us.
Yeah.
And we need to develop an effective pattern for dealing with the outside world. And we're all wanting to be loved and cared for, we've said that, and we depend on this for our survival.
Yeah.
You know, unless our early carers actually look after us, we're cactus, you know, when we're small. So this is, what do we need to do to attract their attention? And our early experiences condition how we're going to later operate in the world. We start to develop some automatic patterns, they're almost like reflexes, that feel so natural to us, we can't imagine that anybody else would possibly operate any way differently.
Yeah.
Until we learn something like the Enneagram,
yeah,
and we start to see, hey, Bernie and Chip are quite different from me,
yeah,
in the way we respond.
Yeah.
So we start to prioritize the data we select and how we process it so that we get attended to and ensure our survival. Whether we're aware of these patterns or not, they influence our daily emotions, the decisions we make, the actions we undertake, both big and small. So we're often in type every second of every minute of every hour of every day, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so it's sometimes quite hard to separate, well, isn't this who I am?
Yeah.
But we actually believe in the Enneagram that underneath is this core,
yeah,
of who we are.
Yeah.
And our type is the way we are actually dealing with the world.
Yeah.
It's an outside,
yeah, yeah,
sort of, yeah, automatic shell.
Hilary, do you mind if I just summarize that? Just up to date. Yeah?
Yeah,
just give our listeners a little summary of what we're hearing. And Chip, you too, Mike, because you've got a very good listener's ear.
Here. Apparently.
Yeah, yeah. What I'm hearing is that when we're born, you didn't use these words, but we're born of spirit. We're born with a reasonably clean slate. But we come into the world. I heard you. I just saw you there just to
with an
hesitate. An inner gem. So we come into the world then, and the world, of course, is already established in some way. It's already founded. So we have to adjust to being in that world.
Yeah.
But the world around us, of course, is predominantly two people, mum and dad.
That's if we're lucky to come from a happy family that's stable. Yeah.
True. And so in order to find our place in that world, we learn how to please.
Yes.
We learn how to win their affection, win their applause, win their reward. And because we're so young at that time, there is a chance that those behaviours then become patterned responses that we could take with us for the rest of our lives and at the start not even realize that we're doing that.
That's right. That's right. And it becomes our automatic reaction.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes for good, and sometimes it really screws us up.
when you say that is, there are some circumstances in which that patterned response doesn't serve us well.
Yes.
Yeah.
It probably served us well when we were young. But we've usually, by the time we become adults, there's a whole lot of other people we've got to fit in with.
Yeah.
And often it doesn't serve us now.
Yeah.
And also when we were little, we were having to just be reactive to what was required of us.
Yeah.
But as we grow up, we actually want to become who we are.
Yeah.
We want to make our own choices, not having them predetermined by the expectations of others whose love we needed to survive.
Yeah. But what I hear you saying there is, even as an adult, even as we grow older, we may think that we're moving forward to become who we believe is our true self, but in fact may not even realize how much those past patterned responses are still lingering.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And still playing a below the surface role.
Yeah.
Well, below the surface in our own mind, maybe not below the surface when others are watching.
Yes. So, in fact, the type works away in the background.
Yeah.
Making sure we're getting our basic needs met, ensuring our core fears and desires are attended to. So there's all of these things that we're less aware of. Mm. And when we start looking at something like the Enneagram, we can read chapters on each of the types, and we start to think, I always thought everyone was like this.
Yeah.
no wonder then I get into an argument with my boss or I get in an argument with my partner because they're picking up a different set of data about the world and they're coming to a different conclusion.
Yeah.
And I think they're wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that doesn't fit mine.
G'day, listeners, you proud roosters crowing against the dawn of self-realization. It's Chip here, and forgive my interruption, but I couldn't let that thought pass without parachuting in with another of my loaded questions. Now, did you hear what Hillary just said? No wonder, then, that I get into an argument with my boss or my partner because they're picking up a different set of data about the world and they're coming to a different conclusion. So here's the question, real specific, two-parter, just like I like them. And I'm willing to bet this has happened to you recently. When was the last time you got into an argument or a disagreement or, let's say, a heated discussion with someone who just could not seem to see the world as you saw it? How maddeningly frustrating they were to you. How they just couldn't see what was so obvious to you. You remember that? Okay, here's the second part of the question. And you can only ask this with the benefit of hindsight, and it takes a bit of empathy, so I do invite you to engage your empathy. How do you think that argument felt to the other person? That you just could not seem to see the world as they saw it. How maddeningly frustrating do you think you were to them? How you just couldn't see what was obvious to them. And do you reckon they remember?
Hey, Chip, you finding this fascinating?
I love this stuff. I think it's really interesting to think about this did serve you, right?
Yes.
Like, but only in this very specialized environment that's typically going to be the family unit.
Yes.
Right? And it doesn't scale. You know,
yes.
Like no type is going to scale.
Mate, you always pick a great word. That is a great word. It doesn't right. scale.
Yeah, it's a very technical word too. Did you notice that?
That belongs to your type.
you may be right. Let's find out.
So our type isn't a perfect pattern, but it's very useful.
Mm.
But it isn't the core of who we are. And one of the things in learning the Enneagram, we start to understand more about what's that core thing underneath. Mm. And why did we have to cover it up? So we protect our vulnerable core with this pattern, and that's still deep there inside us. But sometimes we even lose sight of that. We forget about that.
Mm.
And particularly when I work with prisoners in jail, they've been told so often in their life, what's wrong with you?
Yeah. Mm.
And we actually start, when we're teaching the Enneagram, to talk about what's right with you.
Yeah.
This thing that was always there, that didn't ever go away, but the others didn't see it and you forgot it was there. And that's one of the lovely things about the Enneagram. We can find that again.
Yeah.
And when we finish this podcast, for those of you who are interested in the Enneagram, you might be interested in having a look, and we'll put some things down talking about what the different types are, a little bit more about them, and what this lovely hidden gem is.
May I ask you, when you're working with the prisoners, some of them have had an inordinate amount of time in prison. Has that experience of solitude, that experience of isolation, actually helped them to recognize some of their patterns and helped them to move? Oh, I don't like the word past their patterns, but maybe through their patterns to recognize their truer self?
Certainly when I was working in a correctional center in California, there was not a lot of solitude there.
Oh.
They shared their cells with at least one other person. Mm. And when they were let out to walk around, it was in a sort of a large hall and there would be 30, 40, 50 people wandering around.
Okay.
However, I think what the interesting thing that comes to my mind with that question is, I think all of us sometimes get to a stage in life where we're fed up with who we are. We can see there's something that's not working well for us. And it might happen because of a major event in our life. We might get sick, or we might become divorced, or we might lose a job, or we might be in conflict with a neighbor. There could be all sorts of reasons. But we sometimes get to the stage where I'm fed up with this.
Mm.
And so sometimes that's the trigger for people to start looking at what's got them to this place in life. And I think that's also true for people who are incarcerated.
Mm.
Some of them who have, you know, might really start looking at it. And our programs are voluntary. And so the people who come into our programs quite possibly have got to that stage where they're ready to do something differently.
Mm.
But I know I got to stages in my life where I was ready to do things differently. And I'm so glad I did. So all of us, I think, can identify with that.
I think in a way, the concept of being fed up with life is part of the purpose of this podcast. Because often, Chip, we speak about finding a modified existence.
Mm.
Uh-huh. And the whole concept of a modified existence is to say, whoever we are, we're not finding the ultimate joy and happiness. I don't like that word ultimate. But a significant amount, whatever that is, of joy, happiness and love in our lives in, may I use your word now, the scaled up world that we became a part of. And in that coexistence with that world, we are fed up with that existence, our existence in it, our patterned responses, the world as it is, and let's go on a journey to see if there is another way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. So let's, why did this happen to me?
Yeah.
And sometimes it happens because somebody gives us some feedback, or sometimes we see somebody else who's living a better life than us, as in a happier, more joyful life. Or we might read a book which reads us, it takes us down that path. Or we might listen to one of your podcasts and you think, wow, why don't I bring some of that into my life?
Or the greatest feedback, of course, is can be very, very painful. It's, in my case, it was a separation and divorce.
Yeah. Yeah.
The greatest feedback, definitely the greatest feedback I ever received.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Well, I believe so. I can't think of any greater feedback.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so you take stock.
Yeah.
And then what you do after that is what counts.
Mm.
For some people, they don't take stock. They just move into blame and anger.
Yeah.
And they just assume it's everyone else's fault. And that's the missed opportunity in a way.
Yeah.
So all of us, just take a breath again. Just take a breath. So just before we start the journey where we're going to really focus on Bernie and Chip, I'd like us to just go a little bit further into thinking about the Enneagram, because we have three types of intelligences that we can potentially use. So we know in our Western society we all really focus on IQ or the intelligence. And in Enneagram, we call that the head center intelligence, which particularly those who are 5, 6, and 7 tend to operate very much through their head. So they're hardwired to seek knowledge, to feel secure, to get certainty and trust. And all of us want some of that. But the fives, type 5, 6s, and 7s are particularly the people who are the most in need of that, and therefore they bring this particular gift to us. Then there are three types that are particularly into their hearts, the heart intelligence, and those tend to be the 2s and the 3s and the 4s. And for the heart types, there's a primal need for connection, and love and acceptance and nurturing. So those of us who are particularly focused in that area, which includes me and Bernie here, we are looking all the time for connection. We're looking for what impact are we having on other people? What impact are they having on us? How do I make sure the networks are such so that I'm safe in my family, my community, or whatever's really important for me? And then the other type of intelligence, we talk about sort of gut or body type intelligence, and they tend to be the eights and the nines and the ones, and they're hardwired to have autonomy and dignity and a sense of agency that I can get my things done without people interfering with me. And there's a sort of a strength and power to do with that knowing from the body of what's the right way for me to go. And so depending on what your type is, you'll tend to lead with that particular intelligence. Mm. And so we're just about ready to get onto the fun stuff.
Great.
And to actually start talking Great. About your different types. And one little thing before we go, just imagine I was taking you to this amazing banquet and all the tables are laden with these incredible foods, all your absolute favourites, and you're able to pick up a plate and go and start helping yourself to little bits of this wonderful food, and you can't wait to sit down and start eating. And then you have one or two mouthfuls and somebody comes and whips the plate away.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the analogy of what we're going to do about the Enneagram today.
Mm.
Because it's a huge banquet and we don't have time for it. Mm. You're only going to get a few little tastes of it. and we're hoping that later we're going to be able to feed you and your listeners with a lot more information. Mm. So at your leisure, you can sit down and enjoy this banquet.
Mm.
But I need to tell you this because I know some people might say, yeah, but you didn't answer this question and I wanted to know about this.
Mm.
We can't possibly do that. Mm. So this is where the fun really starts now, because I'm now going to introduce you to Bernie in a way that you haven't seen him before. Although once you start watching and listening to this, you might go, oh, yeah, I can see him doing that. I can see him doing that. We'll see. So Bernie is, we've talked about the heart types, and he's right there in the center of the heart types. We often call the type three the performer or the achiever. And their core gift that they bring to the world is about this radiance, the value they like to bring, this preciousness that they bring, and also hope that there's always something better and good and something that can be achieved.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to read some comments here that are a mishmash of a lot of different threes that have talked to me and also some of the books I've read. So it says, as a three, I strive to be successful and I have boundless energy to achieve. I'm smooth, although Bernie corrected me and said, I'm extremely super smooth.
Is that
very I did not say
thing?
Extremely super. I said super smooth.
He did say super, which is such a type three thing to do.
I'm extremely active and goal-driven.
Mm-hmm.
I endeavour to show with my life that there's no limit for what can be accomplished.
Mm.
As soon as I hit a goal, I move on to the next one.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I don't sit around and think, let's just wallow in this success. Let's get on to the next thing, the next thing. I need to be seen and acknowledged by them. And that's whoever the them is in my life at that stage. It could be at work, it could be at home, it could be friends or whatever. And when they acknowledge me, when this happens, then I feel valued and loved.
Mm.
So this is sort of the petrol I need to keep in my tank to keep me going and driving. It's my motivation. So they project a very positive can-do energy. And they're often, we often see them as, say, project managers. And I certainly see Bernie doing a very much a project management type role in this whole podcast,
yeah,
in lining us up and lining you up and making things happen.
Mm.
And basically, they are unstoppable. and they shine their radiance on us, and then the hope is that they'll get it reflected back on them as well.
That's why I want your feedback, dear listeners.
Where's your comments?
Yes, that's the petrol. That's the petrol to keep you driven and motivated. So, Bernie, does this ring true?
I think you've been speaking to my mother, my brother, my sister.
Can you think of an example where you did things in your family and you got that light shone on you for doing it?
I'm a very instinctive person when I get a question like that. So I just answer with the first thing that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that comes to mind when I was playing baseball.
Right.
As an under 12 baseball player.
Yeah.
And I was the star.
Absolutely.
I was the best catcher in town.
And why was that important?
Well, I didn't know why it was important at the time, except Dad was at first base, the coach, but so too was Percy Cram at third base. And certainly I felt as if I was moving forward. I was playing life as it should be played because through my eyes I'd been introduced to achievement through sport. And that predominantly came from Dad, now, which is an unusual thing for me to say because my mother ran third in the Australian High Jump Championship of 1954. Huh? So she would have played a role. It's just that I can't remember it. But I can certainly remember Dad's influence strongly in setting up a framework in which I was applauded, rewarded through feeling as if I was progressing in the world of sport.
Yep. And, of course, little boys are often very influenced by, well, kids are very influenced by the parent of the same sex. And so maybe it was really important to you that your dad shone his light on you and reflected back the value that you had.
Certainly a way of me feeling I got Dad's approval. I don't want to cast a judgment on the generation.
No.
But the words I love you or the expression of love weren't as prominent from my dad as they were from Mum.
Yeah.
But Mum didn't say it. But you sort of like knew it.
You knew it.
And I knew it from Dad too. I used to know it from Dad because I'd walk down the suburb of Benio down into the township and people would say, oh, I saw you got 100 on the weekend.
Yeah.
I said, how'd you know that? Oh, Dad told me.
Yes.
But he didn't tell me.
Yeah.
He didn't reward me for it, you know, but he told everybody else.
But when you were telling the story about your dad doing it, it was like you were back there. Your eyes were shining. And you were, I could see you felt loved and valuable. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's go dig a little deeper into where this all comes from, because a lot of this comes from childhood. And often in our families, our parents are busy, they're preoccupied with all sorts of things. And so this little three child in this case uses this innate intelligence. You're talking about being instinctive, but it's this instinctive innate intelligence that this is how I get love and this is how I get cared for by shining, which you were able to. So you learnt how to get their love and attention, because if you didn't get this mirrored back to you, it'd almost be like you don't exist. Like you'd be invisible in the family. And so you got this attention, you were validated. And if you don't get it, not only do you not exist, it might feel like a failure or death or even your survival was at risk. So we're all trying to work out what is it we need to do. So it sounds like your father was the one who really saw you as you could shine. In a way, like your mother, you knew she loved you, but your father validated you both by talking to the neighbours and by obviously being pleased with you and your efforts and all the rest of it.
I think Dad was there, I'm talking in the sporting field. Mum was there all the time.
Yeah.
But you're also asking right now a 65-year-old man to have memory way back then. And my memory goes back to Dad at first base, All Stars Black, Mum in the kitchen, always there. Dad not displaying emotional intelligence to the degree which in hindsight I may have valued. Certainly a feeling that I got that from Mum. I'm trying to find another memory.
Okay, so there. Just let me go with that though. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you would have liked more from your father. And so you had to keep working at it and working at it.
I like that.
And it becomes a real pattern that you take into life because I suspect you then worked at it with people that you worked for and people that you married and people who were your neighbours and this working at it one way or another so that we often talk about the type threes becoming a little human doing. Rather than a little human being because you were busy working at it and working at it. And this is really hard because you're just a little kid and you don't know what the other options are.
Because I hope you don't mind me saying it. It was actually really joyful.
Yeah.
Like I was very, very active life. I do have a primary school memory that's appeared right now that might be useful. I remember very early on developing an attachment to wanting to study and understand who I called the great people. And so with half a joke, the mathematics teacher could give me an assignment and I'd still do it on Mother Teresa, Nelson Mandela and John F. Kennedy, that's not literal, but you hear the metaphor,
Yeah.
I was always besotted by how did they get there?
And the achievement.
Yeah, that's right.
And they,
that's right.
Yeah, and yeah. What can I learn so that I can achieve too and I can become great as well.
Yeah.
So it's quite a different path from the one we'll hear from Chip in a little while, and it's different from me. But this is the little three who's already fairly primed into that pattern because you know it creates joy for you. It brings joy and people validate you as a human being, and we all need that. But how it plays out for an adult is I work out what's valued in the space that I'm in. But then others connect with that image, not necessarily who the little Bernie was that maybe you don't even remember. And I learned to package myself up into the image that meets the needs so that I can get validation in return. And the cost to a little type three is, and there are costs for all of us in the patterns that we develop, but the cost is I have to cover up my core. The feeling, and I'm a heart type, so feelings are very much there, but they get covered up because feelings get in the way of being productive and successful.
Question to you, do you actually know you're covering them up?
No, it's because we do know that they just get in the way because I'm trying to learn how to be successful. And so it's much better if I can just focus on getting things done because I know when I get those things done, I usually get validation for that. And so I become very efficient. So also if I am busy feeling a whole lot of stuff, that can get in the way and I can be less efficient. So if I can sort of push that stuff away and be very task focused, if necessary, maybe cut corners to get efficiently from A to B so I can get the validation at the end of that. And out of all of that, because of the pushing down feelings, often type threes can get in the extreme quite burnt out and exhausted because their little bodies are sort of cut off and it's like in here. I'm really tired.
Mm.
You know, I need you to look after me, but I've got something else I've got to do, and I've got another podcast I've got to prepare, and I've got to do another thing here or whatever.
There are two things there, Hilary, which you may find interesting. I can't associate with the word efficient.
Okay.
I associate with the word visionary. I became very visionary.
Focused.
Focused means a picture of possibilities that's way out there and I'm heading towards it. So very early on, my pictures of possibilities became strong, colourful. I was moving towards new possibilities, and they could be quite distant.
So it's like almost like a lighthouse.
That's it. You got it.
That determines that you follow it.
Mm.
And regardless of what's in the way, there's that lighthouse I have to work towards. That's the goal.
Yeah. Now, secondly, a lot of my lighthouses were around sport.
Mm.
So consequently, I didn't run out of a lot of energy because in sport I was a very fit human being. Indeed, I remember coaching a side in a cricket team in the Netherlands on a professional basis. So I was very young for this role. I was moving towards my vision as a cricketer and as a coach and as an analyst and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And someone, they used to watch me in the gym. And I would get all these questions about, how do you do it, man? Because I was like a non-stop machine. Fascinatingly, right now, guess who else is a non-stop machine?
Who?
My son.
Right.
James.
Because.
Yeah. Non-stop machine.
Because I'm wondering if you were not only getting validation out on the sporting field, but also in the gym.
Yeah.
And it may well be that you were validating your son, and he's learned that that's a great way to get my father's love and feel valued.
Could be.
Who knows?
Yeah.
And it could be partly DNA. We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah.
So the other cost can be that for a type 3, they sometimes are not sure of who they are underneath that successful image. Mm. I remember a lady coming to a workshop of mine, and she was in her 60s, and she'd had a whole franchised accounting practices, made a lot of money, very successful woman, and she sold all of that to retire. And she came to the workshop and said, but I have no idea who I am now. I'm no longer running that project.
Mm.
Doing all of those successful things. And that's why she came to the Enneagram, to try and learn a little bit more. Who am I underneath all of this? And I'm sometimes working so hard to achieve the way that others will feel successful. I need to stop and think about what for me is a successful life. And I suspect your quest for finding ways to find more joy and love in life that you're helping your listeners do is also part of all of our quests, including yours.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mine was, of course, this last quest for more joy and more love, stated so specifically through the activity of the podcast.
Yes.
Yeah. Was in fact inspired by an event that absolutely shattered my identity.
Yes. Yes.
Right. The separation and divorce of 7 years ago, whatever identity I'd built up in order to cope with what I call the conditioned world, the world outside of me, the world, scaled up world, Chip, that you referred to before, whatever identity that I had built up was absolutely smashed by the pain and the chaos.
Yes, because
of that singular event.
I was a husband, I was a father, I was
more
a
than that.
Homeowner, I was all of that. But perhaps underneath you, once it was all gone, you had to then find who was this person underneath that didn't ever go away under all the trappings of the conditioned world that you talk about.
Well, it was far more than that. It was actually religious frameworks.
And religion,
it was Catholicism.
Yep. Yep.
I was the good Catholic boy, good Catholic family. Yeah. All of that was part of it, and all of a sudden that was gone. And what would people think of me because this good Catholic boy has now part of a divorced setup?
So I'm not being validated by all of those things, all of those roles. That so for the type three, I've set up all of these roles and I'm trying to do them as well as I possibly can. And now it feels like they've all been ripped away.
So that was 7 years ago.
7 years ago. And what's left after all of that? Well, this is what you're discovering in this podcast, I think.
Oh, far more than the podcast.
Yes, yes.
I mean, the podcast is an outcome of the response.
Yes.
And the response has actually been to...
Whose response?
My response the pain and the chaos.
Yes.
It's not separation and divorce. People need to separate that. It's their events.
Yeah.
What actually came from the event was pain and chaos.
Yes.
And what then came from pain and chaos is reflection and reevaluation around who am I?
Absolutely. And that's where the growth often starts for threes.
Yeah.
Is when they're forced to slow down because somebody's just put a break in that whole system and all of those roles crumble. But actually underneath is this precious gem of the radiance and the value and the hope that there's something after all of this has fallen away. And, of course, that's in a way our lifelong task is once we're on this journey. We spend the rest of our lives filling out what this new thing is with making sure we don't just build another what's the word? Orifice?
Edifice.
Edifice. Edifice. Oh, that's the word. Thank you. Thank you.
That was a rescue chip there.
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't want to go into orifices.
Yeah, that's right.
Not this early in the day. Good Lord.
So the aim is not to build another whole edifice.
No.
With a whole lot of roles in which you're playing to please your audience.
Yeah.
But it's to think about how am I actually actualizing who my core is. And some of the comments here that I gleaned from around about growth for threes, and I think you've been working at this. And the first is to stop rushing on to the next thing.
May I comment? You will hear in this podcast regularly from me as an extension of who I am, the call for people to evaluate their busyness and start replacing it with space.
Yep.
And that's what I personally greatly value.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And in fact, a three said to me, before I even move a muscle, I'm still radiating love and value in the world.
Absolutely.
So I don't have to be busy doing, and the space is the only way you can get it. So, in fact, we talk about wanting love. And for a three, the wanting love comes from learning that actually people want to connect with us as a real person, and this connecting space, or this other three says, I've got to slow down, I've got to breathe, and I've just got to be present with this other person. That's when the connection happens. So when they can set their image aside, then people want to see the three's heart and their authenticity, not all the people that they've met, all the things that they've done, the awards that they've achieved. They're actually, who is this beautiful person inside Bernie that was blossoming there even as he was a tiny little baby? And it's the stepping into the genuineness, bringing love and connection, opening their heart with compassion, open to stopping and just being there with others. And that's the growth path for a three, which I know you've already been working on. And it's quite a difficult task for all of us to put aside that lifelong pattern that we developed And to try and put that aside and say, so who was underneath all of that was the center of the heart intelligence that was the three, with all that potential compassion, both for yourself, so you can stop and create the space, and your compassion and connection with and love for those around us.
May I throw in there, please? I have found that once that identity, that patterned identity to the conditioned world was shattered, and the period of pain and chaos started to wane, the pathway of response, the pathway of embracing a more authentic and even more real and more deeper Bernie, once you actually get on that pathway, I also believe there's no stopping you. Because you start to get an inner feedback, not an external feedback. You get an inner spiritual feedback that says, this is life. This is a greater reality of life.
Yeah.
And I've got some evidence to that, you know. And again, dear listeners, the podcast is evidence because there is no monetization, for example. There is no outside world measurements to this podcast. And yet Chip and I would comfortably spend 2 days a week, not including weekends, because we value space, working on this podcast.
Yeah.
And I can't see us stopping to go, hey, how does this meet the real world? Because there is too much joy in the pathway. But we can only experience that joy because we're in the pathway.
Yes. Otherwise, it might not be valued in the way in a capitalist society might not value it. I had an image while you were talking, and I think of a little nut with a, like a macadamia nut with a really hard core, very hard to crack open. And that may well have been the pre-divorce Bernie. And then in the chaos that you talked about with the marriage splitting up, that then started to crack open.
Well,
and the seed started to grow.
I agree.
And now you're not only growing a tree, but there's perhaps more nuts falling off it that are cracking open with your listeners, and you're growing a whole forest, perhaps.
You should have described a separation and divorce as the ultimate nutcracker.
There you go. That's another t-shirt. Yeah, right?
It was a ripper.
Okay.
Oh, well,
that was a good one. That was a good one.
G'day, listeners, you throaty bullfrogs on the banks of the River Spiritual. It's Chip here. And forgive my interruption, but I couldn't let that thought pass without parachuting in with another of my loaded questions. Now, I've let Burns talk about the value he got from the pain and chaos of his divorce pass too many times in too many episodes. So today's the day, and I'm going to hit you squarely with this question, listeners, because the answer, obviously, from Bernie's own experience, could be utterly invaluable. What event in your life, what bringer of pain and chaos has been your ultimate nutcracker? What event has brought the agony that's propelled you to the next level?
Let's take a breath.
Okay.
And thank you, Bernie. That was wonderful sharing. Thank you. I suspect your listeners will be reflecting on some of the times they've seen you interacting in this podcast, and they'll see that the performance for the sake of the world and putting the effort and energy in into it and achieving all of that.
This is what I hope they see, Hillary.
Yeah.
I've got no problem recognizing my beautiful personality. No problem at all. In fact, I accept it.
But it takes it when you go through a major crisis. It often takes a bit of
It did. Yeah. But the personality has shifted because the core has shifted.
Yes. Yeah.
But what I say,
well,
I've got no problem.
I'm not sure the core has shifted. I think the core was always there, but the shell has cracked open.
Mm.
And it's probably more accessible now than it used to be. Because when you were so busy with all of those roles, you probably didn't have enough time to nurture that little core that was inside. And space helps you do that.
And many other things too.
Yeah,
Meditation helps me do that.
Oh, yeah.
Time with nature helps me do that.
Yes.
Going to Nepal helps me do that. Partnering with Chip helps me do that. Love with people.
Yeah.
And enjoyment of people helps me do that. Yeah. Learning from people helps me do that. Reading books. You know, there are so many influences there.
It's like being receptive now to the world rather than doing to the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely. But what I was about to just say is I hope that for the listener, I enjoy my personality and my performance. But through that, the authenticity of the pathway cannot be compromised, and it can flow through the filter of performance.
Well, your ability to achieve and perform is one of the great gifts you bring to the world, but it's not a gift if it's trying so hard for the sake of the validation. It's a wonderful gift when it's in service to your highest self.
I like that. I don't think it needs to do that as much.
Yeah. And it's a journey.
It's a journey. Of course it's a journey.
And you will keep working at that dilemma for the rest of your life. And that's the core dilemma.
That's the core dilemma
for a type 3.
Yeah.
Yeah? So you've heard it here, folks.
I'll just finish off by saying, and recently I was doing that Vipassana 10-day silent retreat in Nepal. And I broke all the rules. I wasn't supposed to take pen and paper inside my bedroom, but I love writing. You know, so I took that. And I went back and I said, I have no desire whatsoever to be enlightened. In other words, I have no desire whatsoever to actually find and be that total core that we speak about that maybe came with us as a baby. Here's why. Because I want to live. I still want to be in life. But what I value is not so much the outcome of being that spirit. What I value is the pathway towards it and being on the pathway towards it. I have no divine aspirations that I can be that enlightened or liberated human being, but I do know that I have the capacity to head in that direction.
Yeah.
And that is exactly the journey that I see myself on now.
And that's, for us, the Enneagram is the map for that journey.
Yeah, yeah. I get
because
that.
All it gives you is a self-awareness of that pattern so you can make choices as to when to use those wonderful gifts and when not to, because you're now not necessarily operating in the way that's your best self.
Yeah. Well, Hillary, that was a beautiful experience.
Mm.
And I think I'm speaking not only on behalf of myself, but I think I'm also speaking on behalf of the listeners. Chip, do we really know who our listeners are? We know there's a lot of them out there. But I'm just imagining if they were on the receiving end of that, not only did they get the opportunity to know the host and the co-host, and Chip's yet to come, of this podcast, but they also got the opportunity to hear the sharing and be able to transfer that encounter between you and I then into their own world. And I'm imagining what might be going on for some of our listeners, and I'm thrilled that they too get the chance for that private reflection, hopefully inspired by what we just shared together. And you were a masterful facilitator of the experience. So I can only say thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
And I guess the only thing I'd add is that for quite a few of your listeners, they may not really identify with that pattern.
Yeah.
Because they may be one of the other eight patterns.
Yeah.
But those of you who are out there in listener world, if you are a type three, there's a fair chance you might have been recognizing your examples will be different.
Yes.
You know, the behaviors are different, but the motivation, what's driving underneath to be validated through success is, and it'd be fun to have some little comments back from some of the type threes in particular.
Yeah.
Or those of you who, when you look around your family or your work team and you go, yes, I know that person. That person's a three.
Who knows what we've created at the dinner table tonight, Chip.
Beast we've let loose. We do want to put a caution in there that people can sort of just latch on to one or two details and run with that too much. I do encourage everyone to listen to what Hillary facilitated there in its totality, because that's when you get quite a good picture.
Hey, the Chipster, what did you hear? You've been remaining a little silent there, Chip.
That's just, I was uncharacteristically respectful. So there's a few things that are very related. So I want to give you my take on how I see that playing out in real life. Now, you talked a lot about the pain and chaos of divorce propelling you into a greater appreciation of trying to live as a joyful, loving human being. I think it's really interesting that the ways that you're expressing that are still very much in the language and in the mode of somewhat of a like a hard charging success chaser. You're quite structured in the approach. And even when you and I were talking about what we want to make this podcast into, you said you want to present love as a hard edged purpose, you know, and so, and to me anyway, I don't know, Hillary, you can chime in on that, but to me that's very much, I see the type three in that, and I see defining love as a very clear goal that is not nebulous or woo-woo or sort of up in the air. It's, you know, that's a lighthouse. That sounds to me like you're describing one of your lighthouses.
Oh, my friend, I would never assume that the response patterns of 65 minus 7, 58 years have been smashed or eliminated or gone. They would, of course, remain as part of my being. However, if there was, for example, and I am making this up now, if someone said there was a 3.5 or a 2.5, I know there has been a shift different to the pattern that existed pre-separation and divorce.
Yeah.
There's been a substantial shift.
We often talk about a softening. And ultimately, it's about once you know more of the pattern, you can then make choices. Because before you know the pattern, it's often just an automatic reflex. So this happens, I do this. This happens, I do this. But now this happens, and I can pause and have that space that you talked about and then make a choice. Is this the time to bring in my beautiful, exquisite gifts, or is this really not the time because this could end up being hurtful or invalidate someone else or, you know, drive over someone else without my intending to? So I just pause and then I'll make the loving choice as the sort of joyful, loving person I'm trying to become. So it's the slowing down. It's that beautiful quote that comes from Viktor Frankl, and he talks a bit about between the stimulus and the response, there is a space. And in that space, we have a choice. And with that choice, we have our growth and our freedom. So until we know what it is that our pattern is, without self-awareness, there's a stimulus and there's a response and there's no space. There's no choice. Mm. So what you're talking about, alluding to in the 3.5, is sort of that softening of the pattern to give you the space.
Mm.
And in the space, you have your growth and your freedom.
Mm. Well, Chip, why don't we give us some feedback? What are the amazing gifts of Hilary Langford? Just to finish off this podcast, mate. Hilary, can we do something which...
What's he got on his mind? He hasn't told me about this.
Either of us might have struggled to say. You are now quiet. You are mute. We are taking this podcast back, okay? We are starting to re-own it, dear listeners. Hilary Langford, what's beautiful about her and why should we be so thankful for what she's given us in this podcast episode?
Well, people don't know much about my type just yet, but I'll just respond from type and say I adore her clarity of thought and her skill with communicating and her propensity to distill complicated and very valuable ideas down to really digestible, accessible material. I mean, it's just so valuable. Mm. I'm going to say it, energy, just a beautiful energy to be around.
Yeah.
And for me, a very calming one too.
From a very mature soul. Yeah. Mm.
Thank you.
Well, Hilary, after listening to what Chip just said, I've got two other words that I would like to use in describing your contribution to A Journey with Bernie and Chip. I've got to thank you for your passion. Passion for not only what you brought to the episodes and the sharing, but also what you bring to your dedication to people's growth. There are many people who are at your stage of life, my stage of life, and they may have lost the thirst to want to contribute, but that's not you, Hilary Langford. You have this beautiful desire to keep on wanting to make the world you touch a better place. And the second word is empathy. And I utilize the word empathy because you are dealing with a topic matter here in which people are going to have to look at themselves. Mm. And yet, in our experience with you on a number of occasions now, you have always respected that space so beautifully and helped both Chip and I to feel beautifully comfortable in that space.
Mm.
And that would be my definition of empathy. So, Hilary Langford, we are so grateful that you have you've been a part of our lives and also been a part of this episode.
Thank you.
Thanks so
much,
Hilary.
The chip star, chip star. Mate, haven't you got some work to do?
Yeah, I don't know what new ground can I do there, because we've covered so much, but leave it with me. I'll come up with something.
Mate, but you've got so much ground there, you won't know what field to start in. This is like 25 paddocks. Hey, all as I can say is best of luck with your take-home pay. But dear listeners, if ever there was a young man that's going to take this and turn it into something beautiful for you to take home with you so that you can become a more loving human being, it's over to you, dear Chip.
Thanks, Bern. Thank you so much, Hilary. And thank you, listeners, your thoughtful Mexican walking fish in the bubbling aquarium of the contemplative life. Thank you for staying with me, Chip Lachlan Huddy, till the end of this episode for another edition of Chip's Take Home Pay, where I pull together the most impactful themes of the podcast you just listened to and offer some hard, fast, concrete action steps so that you can start applying the wisdom of our guests to your own life, not next week, not tomorrow, but right now and today. I think we're going to stick with self-awareness because it's on point, on brand, and you may have detected by now that I think it's very important because it all starts with awareness, guys. Now, as much as I can, I'll let the episode speak for itself, and I'll let how beautifully Hillary structured and elucidated the episode speak for itself, because I think she makes it very obvious how valuable it is to take yourself through a process like the Enneagram typing system. And since she did such a good job of highlighting the Enneagram's power in raising self-awareness, I want to broaden the picture and call your attention to how it can also build awareness of others, and how that awareness of others can actually pave a pathway to greater development of self. So with that in mind, here are the action steps. First, you need to go to this webpage, enneagraminstitute.com/type-descriptions. That's enneagraminstitute.com/type-descriptions. Now, if you didn't get that, no worries. Just go to the show notes for this episode in your podcast player or on our website. You'll find all the links there. So go to that website, have a read over the overviews of all the 9 Enneagram types, and have a think about which one you are. Now, if you're still not sure after reading about them, it might be worth revisiting last week's episode where I gave you the link to an actual Enneagram typing test. But whichever way you go about it, figure out your type, read about your type in detail, and then I do suggest you read about the other 8 types at least in brief, okay? And then move on to step 2. And step 2 is very, very simple this week, but you have to write it down, okay? So get a pen, get some paper, get the notes app open on your phone, write down your answer to this question. What is the one thing that I would really love to do that I could never do based on the limitations of my Enneagram type? You got that? Okay, now write down your answer to this question. Which of the Enneagram types would be best suited to do that thing that I would really love to do, but can't? And what attributes make that type so well suited to it? You got that? Okay, final question. Here we go. Based on my Enneagram type, what tendencies and motivations could I access to enable myself to achieve that seemingly impossible thing that I'd love to do? Or put it another way, how could I use awareness of my intrinsic pattern as fuel to step outside of that pattern? So you got all that? Okay, that's enough for this week. You don't even have to act on your answers to those questions, okay? Having written them down is enough, but I do invite you to reflect on those answers and to let that bubble away in the background of your glorious aquarium, you magnificent Mexican walking fish of self-insight. And that's all from me, and I'll just end with the usual request for you to please go to the podcast player of your choice. Give us a rating, give us a review. We love a 5-star review because that's the best algorithmically, but we trust you'll do what you think is right. Also, don't forget to go to our website. That's journeywithbernie.co. That's .co, not .com. So go to our website, where you'll find individual pages for every episode, including all the show notes, all the links, and you'll also find ways to get involved with whatever we're doing right now, including treks to Nepal. It could include community outreach. It could include fundraising for a friend of the show, James Lingwood's brilliant documentary about Father Joe, the Catholic priest in the slums of Bangkok. All right, that's all from me, beautiful people. I'm Chip Huddy. This has been Chip's Take Home Pay, and I do hope you found some pay worth taking home. As always, my friends, Alvita Zane, and just remember...